भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय The Supreme Personality of Godhead has just exhibited his very attractive forearm form, Maharaj Parikshit, whirling like a shooting star his club to ward off the heat of the Brahmastra weapon fired by Ashwatthama. And Maharaj Parikshit is seeing that form of the Lord and is very astonished. He's trying to consider, who is this? Astra tejasva gadaya niharam eva gopittihi vidhamantam sani karshe prayakshata kaityasau. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. He is observed by the child, who thought about who he was. Viduyatad ameyatma bhagavan dharma gub vibhu mishito dashama sasya tatraivan tar dhane harihi. While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Lord Personality, Godhead, the Super Soul of everyone and the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. In the purport, Prabhupada is going to be discussing, we'll read parts of it, he's going to be discussing the same question that I posed yesterday. From what place did the Lord appear? Was it from the womb? Was it from the atom? Was it from the soul of Maharaj Parikshit? Which place did he appear from? And then, where did he disappear to? I'll read that, actually, for starters. The top of the next page. He is present everywhere, and he can appear and disappear at his will from everywhere and anywhere. His disappearance from the sight of the child, Parikshit, does not mean that he appeared on the spot from any other place. He was present there. And even after his disappearance, he was there, although invisible to the eyes of the child. So this is a little insight into the transcendental nature of the Lord's Janma, since we're approaching Balaram's appearance and Krishna Janmastami and Radhastami, appearances of the forms of the Lord, is part of our meditation, the transcendental nature of those appearances. Here he's also making an appearance. It's a different appearance. It's a specific appearance. But the principle of appearance is being described. The principle of appearance is, he's already here. And from where does he appear? He's already here. which part of, from where he is here? Well, he's all pervading. He's everywhere. That comes in the earlier part. So, it's a, the question itself is misleading. It's not that from where does he appear? He's already here. And where does he disappear to? Well, he's still here. So the transcendental nature of his appearance is he makes himself visible. And how he chooses to do so is his lila. In the case of Krishna's appearance, he first makes himself appear in the mind of Vasudeva. Is he already in the mind of Vasudeva? Yes. And then he's transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. Is he already in the mind of Devaki before he appears in the mind of Devaki? Yes. And then to the womb of Devaki. And was he already in the womb? Same. At the last sentence of the purport, he is present everywhere, even in the material womb of Mother Durga. And those who are deserving can see him. But it's the divine appearance of the Lord before the deserving candidates. Now, in some cases, in his Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur discusses this point. There are two forms, there are two categories of the Lord's appearance. There's scheduled and unscheduled. Or where he, according to scriptural indication, he performs his rotational leelas. And these are understood before they happen from scripture, while they're happening, and after they happen from scripture. Then there's another appearance of the Lord. He uses the word Sarasaki, which indicates a jubilant state of consciousness when the devotee, the deserving devotee, is experiencing an intense mood of attraction, attachment, deep affection for the Lord. Suddenly he may make his appearance, and then suddenly he may disappear. You know that that happened with Narada, it happened with Vyas, and in a certain sense it's happening here, although it's not due to very, very intense hankering for the Lord or intense devotional practices. Rather, it's the circumstance which, of course, the Lord himself orchestrated to permit Maharaj Pariksit to see him, to give him this deserving devotee the opportunity, even before birth, to see him. In both cases, whether it's the scheduled incarnations or the ecstatic, jubilant manifestations of the Lord, the transcendental nature of his appearance is that it's entirely according to his will. And for various personal purposes, mainly to satisfy and reciprocate with the love of his devotees. And no one else can do like he can do. We don't, at our will, make our appearance in a particular way, in a particular family, with a certain social, economic, cultural, national configuration. It's not according to our will. Prabhupada comments on that actually here also. Maybe in the next one. indirectly it's according to our will because it's by the previous activities that we have performed. How does it say that? I'm going to read something now from the purport of text 12. About 3/4 of the way down. This suitable arrangement of astral influences is never a creation of man's will, but is the arrangement of the superior management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the arrangement is made according to the will, according to the good and bad deeds of the living being. But indirectly, that is, the indirect cause is that we do good or bad deeds. But the more direct cause is there's laws by which what is good, what is bad is determined, by which reactions for what is good and what is bad that we do is delivered. There's higher authorities that are involved. So we're not zero in the whole formula, but we're not creating our birth. I'll choose, let's see. And then when it's time to go, we choose and just disappear. But we're still there. That's not our option. But this is just some, from this verse, it's some appreciation about the transcendental nature of Krishna's janma. Janma karma chime divyam evam yogiti tatvata chakta deham punar janma maiti amiti sojana. So, going back to the purport of 11, in text 11, there are some key words, and the purport is mainly made up of evaluating or expanding upon the particular terms used in the verse that are describing Krishna. Now, the first expression that Prabhupada expands upon is that the living being, the supreme living being that Maharaj Parikshit was observing is not limited by time and space. Now, every living entity other than the Supreme Lord is limited by time and space. Even though a living being is qualitatively one with the Lord, quantitatively there's a great difference between the Supreme Soul and the common individual soul. In Bhagavad Gita, both the living beings and the Supreme Being are said to be all-pervading. Yena sarvam idam tatam. Yet there's a difference between these two kinds of all-pervasiveness. What is that difference? A common living being or soul can be all-pervading within his own limited body. But the Supreme Living Being is all-pervading in all space and all time. Supreme Living Being . There's more to it than that, but that's one distinction. The all-pervasiveness of consciousness through the body is, it has its limitations. And besides the fact that it's not according to our will, I think I'll be all-pervasively conscious of this body. No, I don't think I won't be. Maybe I'll go to another body. It's not at our will. And to be all pervasively conscious can be checked by material circumstances. Prabhupada gives the example if you use a tourniquet. You know what a tourniquet is? Take a piece of cloth and tighten it and tighten it and tighten it and you cut off circulation. Put it in your car. cartels in play for a long period of time, cut off circulation. And then there's no feeling in that place that's not getting blood. Well, you can, so consciousness, some part of the technology you can understand as consciousness is distributed in certain ways through the circulatory system. Just like the rays of light are spread throughout illuminating the universe, but there's darkness if there's an object that blocks it. So consciousness is spread through that medium, therefore the Lord is in the heart and distributes consciousness. At least our consciousness is distributed that way. But the Lord's consciousness is not limited by blood circulation or tourniquets. He can be certainly very conscious because he's literally all-pervasive. Not just that his consciousness spreads, but he is everywhere by his expansion as Paramatma. So that's another sharp difference between our all-pervasiveness of this body and his all-pervasiveness of all time and space. Because he's literally everywhere present. Directly and indirectly through the expansion of his energies. And so there's a consequence of these two differences of all-pervasiveness. A common living being cannot extend its influence over another common living being by its all-pervasiveness. But the Supreme Supersoul, the Personality of Godhead, is unlimitedly able to exert his influence over all places and all times and over all living beings. Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita about the misconception of thinking that we have influence over other living beings. That's what is the verse in Bhagavad Gita? The Kartritvam, the Karmani, Lopasha, Surajite, Prabhu. Bhagavad Gita? Look it up. Just look it up. Look it up. So, Krishna's explanation, the verse is saying, one should not think of oneself as the performer of actions, nor should one think of oneself as the cause of the results of actions, nor should one think of being the cause of other person's actions. One should know, rather, that everything is being carried out by material nature. The activities of this body is the action of material nature. The fruits produced from the actions of this body caused by material nature. And inducing others to act is caused by material nature. If we're acting through false ego, we're thinking, I'm causing work to be done. I'm causing fruits of the work to be done. And I'm inducing or, he's using the same word here, exerting influence over others to do. That's acting through false ego. The reality is, it's being enacted through material nature, and who's in charge of material nature? We're not. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sachara charam. The Krishna is all pervasive in that sense. By his presence as the Supersoul within every atom, between every atom, within the heart of every living entity, he is influencing matter to do what matter does. The living beings don't have that. Yeah, otherwise, it's we're thinking, I'm Krishna, I'm Purusha, I'm the cause, I'm the creator, I'm the enjoyer. Maya. That conception of life is Maya. So this is Bhagavad Gita 5:15. Excuse me, 5:14. Na karma pala samyogam svabhavas tu parivartate. Svabhava. Svabhava means one's own nature. In this case, it means the modes of nature. The modes of nature are conducting activities. That's our philosophy. We have a role to play, Prabhupada indicates in the next purport. What is that role that we have to play? We can desire. And we have previous activities that we chose to do, or at least were induced by the modes of nature, and we had some small part in that choice. And now we're reaping the fruits of those past activities in the form of being induced by the reactions of our previous activities to be lusty or sense-controlled, to be greedy or satisfied, to be angry or forgiving. Just the mode of nature acting. So, somebody was asking me in some exchange with them yesterday, how to overcome anger. Become situated, ultimately just become Krishna conscious, or become situated in a state of consciousness where, although impelling forces may come, Your state of consciousness is that you just want to act for what Krishna wants you to do, and therefore you don't yield to that force, that urge. Like this discussion yesterday about pain, does someone who is in a transcendental position experience pain? They may be aware that there's pain, they just don't identify with it. Like Prabhupada held up his arm and turned his arm around and said, oh, this body is getting old. Time to get, just like you look at a shirt or something. Useless. You can recognize the shirt is getting old, but you don't think that's me. Or Bhakti Tirtha Swami is a hero as far as his transcendental consciousness is concerned. He's giving us these reports of, you know, well, it's either amputate my foot or die in 6 months or whatever's going to happen. And I'm looking at different protocols for treatment, and you know, a lot of people have different suggestions, but ultimately, it's in Krishna's hands, and I believe the Prabhupada is going to decide whether I'll stay or go sooner or later and where. And I just have to be tuned into this will that Prabhupada is, my life is in the control of. He wants me to go somewhere and serve in some other way. So be it. He wants me to stay and be an example. Whatever he wants me to do. I'm really detached. It's just amazing. For something that's so dear, this body. Not like he wants to throw it away, but whatever Guru and Krishna want, he's ready. He's enthusiastic. He has a very incredible sense of humor, and it's really amazing. Very Krishna conscious. to understand Krishna, we need to understand the difference between Krishna and the living entities. So one of the features of Krishna, he's in the womb, and Maharaj Pariksit's in the womb, and there's two different entities. One is all pervasive, although there he is. He's all pervasive. That's a contradiction. There's the localized feature who's all pervasive. Now an impersonalist can't put their mind around that one. But through devotion and proper hearing and just a great appreciation for the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Lord, Jiva Goswami explains very succinctly, very clearly, there's no question of understanding God without accepting that he has inconceivable potencies. If you want to say, no, then he's not God. And your conception is not a godly conception. Inconceivable potencies. He can be localized and all-pervasive simultaneously. And so he saw. He was exerting his influence through all time and all space, and there he is right before my eyes. Imagine what that experience, that realization must have been. Another term that's found in the verse is this Dharma Gup, the protector of the righteous. So Prabhupada gives a definition at the bottom of the page in the purport. What is a righteous person? A righteous person who's surrendered to the Supreme. Sarva Dharmam Mam Ekam Sharanam. That's the pinnacle or the fruit, the full matured stage of any form of Dharma is surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What follows behind such a surrender is all kinds of virtuous, righteous, theistic conduct. You're not going to find a surrender to the Supreme Lord person who is an abomination, a sinful wretch. That's not going to happen. If there is some discrepancy, Krishna corrects the discrepancy because that person is surrendered. He's uplifting and protecting that person. So he's the protector of the righteous. You see the connection. There's a lesser level of, or lesser conception of righteous, and that's someone who their highest value of life is to act, to be a good person. But the good person is always going to yield to weaknesses. And the good person is going to make mistakes in understanding what is good. In other words, the good person is not all-powerful and all-knowing. The true sense of goodness is one who is completely dependent upon the Supreme Powerful, fully surrendered. Now they know, they must know what is Dharma, and they choose Dharmic conclusions or theistic conclusions. A devotee should abide by theistic conduct, but that's not what makes one a devotee. It's not the behaviors, the conduct. It's the surrender to the Personality of Godhead. And the subset or the secondary feature is the theistic conduct. Anyone who is a surrendered soul to the Supreme is righteous. And he is specifically protected by the Lord in all circumstances. Indirectly, the Lord is the protector of the unrighteous. How is he the protector? Well, the Lord has his external energy, and through his external energy, he provides provides an opportunity for correction of those persons. Then another term, so this Ameyatma is one of the terms, all-pervading supersoul. Dharma Gup, the protector of the righteous. Then the next term that's focused upon is Dashamasasya, one who's dressed by all directions. Dashama, the 10 directions. Here's what Prabhupada says about that one. The Lord is mentioned herein as one who is dressed in the 10 directions. This means dressed with garments on 10 sides, up and down. Now he goes back to the all-pervading term, and then he writes what I read already. He can appear from everywhere and anywhere. And similarly, his disappearance. When he disappeared, he was still present, but not visible. So it's a question of appearance or disappearance from anywhere to anywhere. He's not restricted. I mean, we have to walk through the door. A ghost can walk through the wall. And Krishna's already here. And he can appear however he likes, whenever he likes. And he likes to appear before his devotees, so he appeared before Maharaj Krishna. The material covering of the effulgent firmament is something like the womb of the mother nature. Just like the womb of Uttara. So as if the Lord can be present within the womb of material nature, he can be present within the womb of Uttara, or vice versa. Once again, it's the inconceivable potencies of the Lord and understanding his feature as Paramatma. When one understands those two things, then it's just like fun. If the Lord is having his leela, and the devotee is appreciating, wow, what leela! How creative he is! What amazing imagination the Lord has to do things and orchestrate things in this way and that way. Wow, Krishna. It's like the coward boys, they would come home at the end of the day and inform their parents, let me tell you what Krishna did today. And they would hear the coward boys describing the different demons and things that Krishna would do. And how wonderful is Krishna? Come on, let's have our dinner. We'll talk more about Krishna over dinner. And they weren't thinking of him as the all-pervasive super soul. They were just thinking of him as this wonderful child. Imagine with that. The quality of that love. So, the material covering of the effulgent firmament, that's the spiritual sky, is also something like the womb of the Mother Nature. And we are all put into the womb by the Lord, the Father of all living beings. He is present everywhere. Even in this material womb of Mother Durga. So, and those who are deserving can see him. He creates Durga. He creates the material nature. He provides the seed-giving, as the seed-giving Father, he provides the living entities to enter the material nature. And he enters into the heart of those living entities, and then he makes appearances for the Lord. Appearances for the pleasure of those devotees, and also to rectify the miscreants. Amazing. I mean, besides the technology of the whole thing, it's the compassionate nature. So strong. Then the next verse discusses the zodiac. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. So Prabhupada spends time initially speaking about astronomy, and then astrology, and then what role the living entity, how that has an impact upon the living entity, and what role the living entity has on creating their astrological influences. It's indirectly, it's by choices that we've previously made or that we're now making for a future astrological influences. He writes that this is an arrangement of higher authorities. He cites Bhagavad Gita 3.9 to give scriptural reference to this. Every action of life produces another reaction which is binding upon us, and only those who are acting on behalf of Yajna or Vishnu are not bound by reactions. 3.9, yeah. Yajna tat karma no yatra lopayam karma pandana. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this world. Work causes bondage. So that's he's saying. That's versus every action produces another reaction. Karma bandhanai. So how does that reaction come as an influence? One way of evaluating that influence is stellar influences. Prabhupada writes, the law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by respective stars. So this is a cause-effect within material nature. One may not understand the cause and corresponding effect. It's there. There's a science for it. One can evaluate the science, evaluate the influence very scientifically, although it's a subtle science, but it's a science. A living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of such astronomical influence. Therefore, a man's destiny is ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars and a factual horoscope that's made by a learned astrologer. It's subtle, but it's a science. Where is that influence coming from? In one sense, it's coming from the stars, but the higher sense, he explains, it's exerted upon the body by the personality of Godhead. It is a great science, and misuse of a science does not make it useless. Maharaj Pariksit, or even the personality of Godhead, appears in certain constellations of good stars, and thus the influence is exerted upon the body, thus born at an auspicious moment. Jayanti means good constellation. Maharaj Pariksit had that good constellation. As a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Pariksit was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord. A suitable moment is chosen when all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king. And then he makes this statement, the purpose of his appearance. He took his birth just to be known as the great hero of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, previously it said he took his birth to exhibit the prowess and great qualities of his father, or his grandfather, great-grandfather, Pandu, the heir apparent of Pandu, the son of the descendant in the line of the Pandavas. This suitable arrangement of astral influences is never a creation of man's will. It is the arrangement of the superior management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. So he's the remote cause. The Lord, the stars, the presiding personalities of those stars, the laws of nature, the whole thing. Herein lies the importance of pious acts performed by a living being. Only by pious acts can one be allowed to get good wealth, good education, and beautiful features. He then goes into explaining Garbhadhan Sanskar and how, at least one sense of this is how one living entity can create a pious or auspicious situation for another living entity by their observance of samskaras. And that it's kind of previously indicated that Maharaj Yudhisthira did that himself. He ministered his kingdom very generously. And how did he do that? Just by being very pious. He distributed his wealth, the wealth of his piety, by increasing his piety. He made others pious. He made others fortunate by his own piety, his own the good fortune that came from his piety. So parents, maybe some of you here will one day become a parent, you can, even before the child is born and following the birth of the child, following the conception of the child and so forth, you can create an auspicious situation by proper observing that being in pure consciousness, basically, which includes performance of proper samskaras. Now, there's another living entity involved in all this, and that's the living entity that takes shelter at the time of conception. But they're provided that auspicious situation because of their past piety, and if the present population doesn't create that piety, that atmosphere of piety, well, that's unfortunate. I just saw some statistic the other day that the 1 billion population of India is now 54% of it is 25 years and younger. There's a lot of children being born in India today. And the Punya Bhumi, the piety of India, isn't what it used to be. And as Prabhupada indicates, one of those features is who is performing Garbhadhan Sanskar? And what to speak of all the rest of the fruitive mentality and the lack of observance of religious principles, particularly religious principles with proper knowledge, executing prescribed duties with proper knowledge of the purpose behind them. So what's the cure? I mean, there's a phenomenon that's happening. What's the cure to the problem? It's Krishna consciousness. Propagating Krishna consciousness. Being and propagating Krishna consciousness. It's not birth control methods or better schools or etc., etc. The great necessity for Krishna consciousness. So, I'm going to have to leave in a half an hour. I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Look at your notes. If you have some questions, go and come right back.
Alright.
Unscheduled means within the heart of his pure devotee. And that's legitimate. But it's not that we don't have the problem that you just addressed. Someone prating around saying, I'm the Lord. Someone may parade around and say, I've seen the Lord. But Prabhupada's response to that one is, from our six Goswamis, we understand the mood of one who's actually seeing the Lord. That the mood of intense love and separation, never claiming. Another way around. They hide naturally because of their humility and knowing that imitation persons without proper qualifications will make such claims so as to not encourage but to discourage these the address themselves in a very humble way. And genuinely their mood of love is intensified by that mood of separation. That's our response to that one.
I'm thinking that the problem in the past was appreciate the Lord.
One of the things in the class was to appreciate the Lord.
The potency of the Lord.
Sure.
How
one can actually be able to do that? By hearing with faith? Simple. You hear the descriptions of the Lord's exhibiting his inconceivable potencies with faith. We can't experience what Maharaj Pariksit experienced unless the Lord chooses for us to experience that. But we can experience through hearing that the potency, what he looked like, his size, what Maharaj Pariksit's feelings were. Who is this? He's still in the womb. That came out in another question yesterday. Conscious in the womb? Yes. Conscious in the womb. He saw. He was amazed. And he experienced that the Lord was not limited by time and space. Now, what is our experience of a living entity that's not limited by time and space? But by hearing, we can have our faith nurtured and our appreciation of the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. Instead of having our minds rule and in the mind going to, hey, how's this possible? And then another platform, through submissive, ardent hearing is the phrase that Prabhupada uses. Ardent indicates a quality of feeling. It's intense, and there's eagerness. How our realization of Krishna's inconceivable potencies can expand.
Srihat Bhagavatamrita. Gopal Kumar is visiting in Dwarka, and Dwarkadish, Lord Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, senses that Gopal Kumar has the mood of Vrajavasi, but he's in Dwarka. So he's attracted to the Lord, but he's feeling a little uncomfortable being in Dwarka. He's Vrajavasi. So the Lord, recognizing his mood, wants to give him a proper place to live, so he considers he should not stay in the royal palace of Dwarka. Let him go to Uddhava's home. Because Uddhava has been to Vrindavan, he knows the mood of Vrindavan, he'll feel comfortable there. So he sends him, requests Uddhava, take him with you to your home. And when he reaches the home, Narada comes to the door. Narada. And Narada requests Uddhava to describe the wonders of Dwarka. And Uddhava says, how can you ask me to do this? I'm a Kshatriya and you're a Brahmin. How can I have the audacity to speak before you? And Narada just laughs. He says, this is the spiritual world. We don't have designations like Brahmin and Kshatriya. And then he goes on for some time. Uddhava then says, even our Lord, he thinks of himself as a Kshatriya. He's the ruler and prince here in Dwarka. And Narada laughs and laughs and laughs. He just loses himself, rolling on the floor laughing. Just see the Leela of our Supreme Lord. Not only when he appears in this, in the material world, he takes on a certain role, but he just performs these wonderful Leelas. What inconceivable potencies he has. He's a relisher of those inconceivable potencies. He knows. And therefore, through that, he enjoys. How amazing. He says in Bhagavad Gita he has nothing to do with. But he still acts like that and thinks of himself like that. How amazing. But he is reciprocating the love of his devotees. That's what if he gets the other living entities want to take shelter in Dwarka. The all mighty, all powerful, all opulent, supremely worshipable, Lord of all being. So he accepts that bhava to satisfy their word of love for him. Narada's relishing is inconceivable. Witnesses and qualities. Yes.
What is the difference in the consciousness of the person who is trying to be obedient and one who is trying to be submissive?
What draws you to ask that question?
So that you are not stuck to be just obedient. The very thing as you were saying that activities are not important, what is important is surrender.
Well, okay, so obedience is good. One of the features of goodness is one does one what ought to do. That's goodness. And submission is the feeling that's behind that. And specifically, submission to Krishna is transcendental. So it's the difference between goodness and transcendence. Or the difference between behavior and the feelings behind the behavior. The consciousness behind the behavior.
So
what induces one to be submissive. If it's materially based, it's impermanent. It's not real submission either. It's another behavior. So submission implies consciousness, recognizing the distinction between myself and a superior and being submissive to that superior, which is exhibited in the form of behaviors. These are subtle things, but these subtle things make the difference between mama maya dvaratyaya, struggling very hard with material nature, including the mind, or crossing on the other side very easily. It's the difference between the material and the spiritual world, or material and spiritual consciousness. Subtle, but that's the vast difference. Anything further? It'd be easy on this one. Yeah. I told you I would do it. I just keep my word, that's all. Oh, a couple of things. But these things are important. Coming and spending time with all of you is important to me. Because you're all important to Krishna. It's an honor to be Krishna's servant in this world. So if I can supply some resources that help you understand Krishna and your relationship with Krishna better, that's nice. And I feel very fortunate. Being responsible without being Krishna conscious is useless. If you're Krishna conscious, how can you not be responsible? And caring. It just falls in line. It's part and parcel. It's a subset of at least trying to be Krishna conscious. I'll send you another one. This I wrote to somebody yesterday. They were expressing their appreciation for the care that they're being shown, and I was expressing my appreciation for their simple heart and their feeling of gratitude. And I sent them a little quote from the third canto, where the verse says, and Prabhupada explains in the purport, that for one who has gratitude in their heart for the gifts that Krishna has given, devotional service is guaranteed for that person. It's due to Krishna's loving nature. And we can say the converse, but let's say it in the positive, that genuine feeling of gratitude guarantees one devotional service. advancement on the path of devotional service. Start taking things for granted. Or lose your Krishna consciousness, lose the simple and grateful heart. You lose your Krishna consciousness. So, little simple things of life, although there's the material counterparts, when the feeling is there behind it, the submission, specifically, the submission to Guru and Krishna is behind it. Our Krishna consciousness, our progress in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Our continued involvement in devotional service and advancement on the path of Krishna, the unfolding of our bhakti lata, is guaranteed. It's infallible. Krishna's protection is there. Nothing can happen. And one can feel that protection of Krishna. What's the price? Simple and grateful heart. Prabhupada supplied me with some things. I'm very grateful. He's asked me, you bestow these things upon others. I made you fortunate. You make others fortunate. Yes. That's part of a simple and grateful heart. It's part of the loving network of the descending mercy of the simple succession. And when it comes in floods. Open your heart, receive the flood. Have a simple and grateful heart. It's very satisfying. There isn't something else that matches in satisfaction, it just doesn't exist. Very sublime. Very, very mystical, very wonderful, very intriguing, inconceivable. But it happens. Consistently, very scientifically. Inconceivable. Prabhupada called it the mystery of the disciplic succession. So you need to receive with a simple and grateful heart, and you need to then pass that which you have received on to others. That's our life. Receiving and giving. There's details and other things that we do, but it's the essence of it is receiving and giving. Loving exchanges. Udati, prati, grinati. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.